Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Hi-de-ho, I'm Uno Clay from Philadelphia, and I support Gen X Grown Up on Patreon. In a world torn apart by angry pundits and ceaselessly acerbic news, the cheerful tone of Gen X Grown Up is always a welcome escape, not to mention endlessly entertaining, and sometimes even informative. If you want to support the show too, click on genxgrownup.com/Patreon and toss them a couple bucks. It's the guaranteed way to gain the respect of your peers and immediate promotions at work.
Not guaranteed in all 50 states. Some employers may see fit to demote you, and your peers will probably find you weird and distasteful. Results may vary. You are warned.
No life, no fun. Don't you know that you're a grown-up?
Gen X Grown Up is a YouTube channel, website, and audio podcast you're listening to right now. All made for and by people who love exploring media, games, tech, and toys of yesterday and today through the eyes of Gen Xers who refuse to grow up.
Your dinner cannot just be french fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown-up.
Welcome back, Gen X Grown Up podcast listeners, to this, the backtrack edition of the Gen X Grown Up podcast. I am John. Joining me, as always, of course, is George. Hey, man.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Would be a show without Mo. Hey, Mo.
Hey, how's it going, everybody?
40 years ago now, a Russian software engineer wrote a simple puzzle game in his spare time. It featured a variety of geometric shapes falling into a well, and in short order, the world was in love with his creation. In this episode, we'll dive into one of the most iconic and enduring video games of all time, Tetris.
Is it me, but every time we do these intros and I hear things like 40 years ago.
Oh, it's not just you.
30 years ago. I'm just like, oh, God.
Well, considering George the Mo is so old, 40 years ago is just a flash in the pan to him. That's just, he's like 80 or 90, I think, right?
Well, at least.
Sure.
It's not just you. We will be jumping into that in just a moment. But first, we always like to start the show with some fourth listener email. We love when our listeners take the time to write in and tell us what they thought about shows or what our show dredged up memories that they had long forgotten. And I have a couple of them here, a couple of short ones. First is from Kevin M. And I included this one because I was just impressed. The subject line of this email was caught up.
With?
And he says, just finished listening to all your podcast episodes.
Wow. That's quite a feat these days for us. That's a lot.
Yeah. So I was trying to look at the number. So this is 167, but we number them every other. So that means what? 334. Is that what it is? Okay.
Well, yeah. When you double 167... But then there's also specials and
Oh yeah, that's true. That makes
so
up
350
for it.
Or whatever. So Kevin, impressive.
Yeah,
he says great job so far. So and he would know. He's heard them all now. So I'm going to go with his word. And then he says, John, Goonies backtrack. Well, I'd have to watch it first, wouldn't I? I would have to be just a straw man.
Maybe it's a way of raising money.
Wraps it up by saying, can't wait to see what y'all come up with from here. Thank you, Kevin.
Nice.
Excellent. And our patron, Kat, dropped us a line also. Subject line was the video game crash. You guys remember that backtrack earlier this year, I think. She says, in that episode, remember we talked about how some people didn't even realize there was a crash because we were young and we didn't know the financial aspects. And she says, at the age of 12 and with an Atari 2600 in our home, I had no clue about the crash. We played the few games we had. My interest expanded elsewhere. And when my 82 born brother received an NES system later in the 80s, I had no clue. It wasn't simply an improvement upon what had come before. So
yeah, a lot of people.
It was. And I think, too, we've talked about many times that for a lot of folks, that was just a more accessible video game system because everything was in the clearance $5 bin and people that previously couldn't get games did. So in a lot of ways, the crash laid the groundwork for the video game industry that came out of it. So, yeah, thank you, Kat, for writing in and letting us know what you remembered. I know Kat's favorite game is Frogger's, so I expect that was one she had. We love it every time the fourth listener takes time to write in. If you would like your email featured here on the show, it's drop dead easy. Just hit us up at podcast@genxgrownup.com. Read every single one, and most of them eventually end up in the show. Okay, that good business behind us, it's time to jump into the Tetris backtrack right after this quick break.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
You're listening to Gen X Grown Up. But if you have a friend who's not yet listening, why not? Tell them about us. They'll thank you later.
They said it wasn't humanly possible, but now you can have all the power and excitement of Nintendo right in the palm of your hand. Introducing Game Boy. It's portable, it's in stereo, and its games are interchangeable. Plus, Game Boy comes with the outrageous new game, Tetris. And for head-to-head competition, use the revolutionary video link and blow your opponent away. Game Boy, only from Nintendo. Now you're playing with power, portable power.
I don't think there's anyone who does not know about Tetris. Even if you don't play games, even if it's not something that is on your radar, it's unavoidable. It's in pop culture. It's everywhere. But 41 years ago, it wasn't a thing. And then 40 years ago, it was developed. And as we often do, we had Mo do some digging as our resident historian to find out about the history and the origin of Tetris. Mo, you want to share with us what you found?
Sure. Am I the historian because I'm the oldest? Is that what's going on here? Or is that... I had the most recent memories of it. But anyway, okay. But yeah, from looking up this information, I mean, some of this stuff I definitely knew. Some of it I was like, oh, I didn't know that stuff. So it was kind of interesting. So, I mean, everyone knows that it was created by software engineer in Russia called Alexei Pajitnov. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly.
I think you are.
And he created it back in 1984. And he was working for basically a computer center in the Soviet Union at the time, the Soviet Academy for Sciences. And he actually wrote it as more of an exercise. He didn't plan for this to become like a thing, you know, that a huge money-making game. Right? The original one he wrote, the computer they wrote it on did not even have graphics. So it was all done with ASCII characters. So I mean, and actually, you kind of can see it because it's just a grid, right? So there's no reason why you couldn't use an ASCII screen to do it, I suppose. The figures would look kind of weird, but, you know, that never stopped him before.
Right.
And he added the part where the completed lines deleted because he realized that as if he did it, it would fill up to the top like really, really fast. So he's like, oh, I know, when I complete a row, I'll just delete it and everything will drop down and give me more space. Mm-hmm. That's where the game came from. Essentially, that started it all.
That is the Tetris mechanism. That's exactly what you're doing. The goal and the trick is how many can you get done at the same time, right? If you get one, two, or three, I think. And so he probably never planned that four of them is called a Tetris, but
otherwise
the game is over pretty quick, right? That's how you lose.
Exactly.
They fill the screen.
It was inspired by a puzzle game he played as a kid called Pentaminoes. It's basically the squares, like there's five, I think, and you have to make certain geometric shapes, but they were like physical things that you put together to make, like, you know, fill in this grid with these shapes, and you had to like arrange them and get them to fit into the shape perfectly, that kind of stuff. So that's where he kind of got the idea from. He obviously shared it with his friends, you know, like he probably is pretty proud of it. They shared it, and again, this is going to date everybody. He had to write it onto floppy disks and give it to people. And apparently they got so addicted, they made copies of that disk and started giving it to everybody else. And they said pretty soon it had spread through all of Moscow. Like everybody was probably, productivity probably dropped substantially. And everyone was playing this game at that point. So from there, he sent a copy to a colleague he had in Hungary and it put it on display at this exhibit at the Hungarian Institute of Technology. And it came to the attention of a guy named Robert Stein. And he owned a software company called Andromeda Software. And he was from the UK. And he saw it and he saw, wow, this thing could make some money. So he actually tracked down Pajitnov in Moscow. And here's the part that's kind of screwed up because this is back in the Soviet Union days. Communism, like you don't own stuff. So they basically, the agency, they created a new agency. And I'm not even going to try to pronounce this thing so you guys can look this up. But the ELORG is the short of it.
Well, I'm going to try.
Okay, go for it, man. Go for it.
Elektronorgtechnika.
Ooh, that's pretty good, man.
Maybe. It's about 30 letters long.
Yeah. I'll just assume you're right.
Okay.
And they basically controlled all the distribution of all Soviet made software. So they're the ones that actually licensed it to Stein, who then licensed to distributors in the United States and UK. So originally the guy made, like, I don't think he made any money.
Yeah. So I want to hang a flag on this. And this is something that I want to make sure people that are thinking about Tetris, the guy that wrote it did not own the rights to it because he lived in the Soviet Union. That was, now things changed later, I know, but initially for decades, the guy who created this thing, you know, it was on a whim, it was whatever, but he did it. Mm-hmm. But because of the nation.
That's not unusual in the video game world. That was happening with Atari for a decade before right? The guy who wrote Adventure didn't own the rights to Adventure. Atari owned it.
Oh, right.
You're definitely right. But those people were, Warren Robinette wrote Adventure. He was working for Atari. So anything you create while working for that company, but this was beyond the company even. The nation said, you don't get to own stuff.
Yeah.
It's like the Atari situation of the nth degree for Pajitnov.
Yeah, it was definitely a different time back then for sure, especially in the Soviet Union, or now Russia, but back then Soviet Union. And he licensed it to Spectrum Holobyte, which I'm sure we're all familiar with that name if you played any video games back in the 80s, and Mirasoft Limited, which I was not as familiar with, but I think that's a UK company that did software. So the agreement he made with them was that basically he got the license for Tetris only for personal computers. That's it.
Okay.
He didn't get anything for coin-operated machines or handheld devices or anything. He just had PCs. But at the time, that was probably all he thought about. Probably, I wouldn't be surprised.
Mm-hmm.
Although he was trying to get the rights, of course. But you know, that's later down the road. So they sold it to, like, did deals with companies like Atari and Sega in Japan, which of course those are people, and they actually did start creating like the kiosks and for consoles and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So then they said, okay, now the whole thing with the handheld, like the Game Boys and stuff, started coming out, which this game, of course, would be like a perfect fit.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, in hindsight, we now know it was the perfect fit for the Game Boy.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Something you can play just right in front of you, especially a simple game, you know, easy to play, addictive. So they had to go back, get a new agreement for the licensing for this. And the Soviets actually thought it was like, they were almost insulted by this because they thought this was like a toy. Like, this was not taking it seriously. This wasn't doing, which they had a very weird outlook on things, you know?
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. But then he, you know, spoke the universal language, said, but you can make money. And they're like, oh, well, in that case, sure. And of course, we know then Nintendo got the rights for the handhelds and the consoles, which again made Nintendo God knows how much money and made the Soviet agency money as well. So you mentioned earlier, John, about how like Pajitnov did not have the rights.
Right.
They estimate that he lost out on $40 million.
Wow, man. And this is just one story. I always wonder about what are the other stories of things that people created under the Soviet Union that they just absorbed. This just happens to be the most famous one, maybe. But
yeah, it's the most,
a lot of revenue.
It almost seems like the most egregious because this game is so popular, you know.
Yeah, but I can only imagine $40 million is making George's eye teeth itch a little bit. He's like, oh, that money. He lost all that money.
He lost it.
Yeah.
So then, but 1996, after the Soviet Union fell, you know, Russia split up, he got the rights back in 1996, which if I was thinking back then, I'd be like, is that too late? You know, because
you'd think
it's almost 10 years after
the Tetris game is over. It'll be done soon.
But apparently he co-founded the Tetris company and they basically got all the licensing, and it still continued to sell, you know, that and some variants, which we'll talk about later. But they said by December of 2011, it had sold 202 million copies. I mean,
man,
that's just crazy. They said 70 million physical units and then 132 million paid mobile game downloads. That's phones, iOS, you know, Android, all that stuff. 132 million, even at a dollar a pop. That's amazing. And you know they charge more than a dollar for that sucker.
Well, I guess 96 wasn't too late after all. Still fruit on the tree.
And they said it basically made it like one of the best-selling video game franchises of all time. And matter of fact, the Game Boy version is one of the best-selling games, period, of all time. With sold over 35 million copies just for the Game Boy. I mean,
wasn't Tetris the launch title for the Game Boy? I'm trying to remember. Was it packed in? They might have been for some of them.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm trying to remember. I remember, I mean, I had it, but it's one of those games I'm sure I would have bought if I didn't have it.
It wasn't included. I thought it was included. If it wasn't included, it was a launch title, at least. It was at the outset of the Game Boy. It was, everybody had it that I knew had a Game Boy had that game.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And they said today it's available in over 65 platforms, and it has a Guinness record for the most ported video game, which makes complete... Again, it's just so simple a concept in a game. You can port it to literally anything. I mean, I can't think of a single thing you cannot port this thing to. Even like the old LCD screen ones, remember those with the...
Yeah.
It got ported to those because it worked.
Why not? Why not? Well, started didn't need graphics. It was text in the first place. Yeah.
Right.
All right. Well, Mo, thank you for doing all that research. I mean, I enjoy Tetris. It's not like my favorite game. And so I'd only heard little snippets of that information and to know the background of that and how it got there. Now, you mentioned it was ported to lots of different places and lots of different locations. When we get back from the break, we're going to talk about some of those ports and variants and distributions of this game that is now 40 plus years running. So stick around. We'll be right back.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Be sure to subscribe to or follow Gen X Grown Up wherever you listen. And while you're there, rate and review the show too. It helps more than you know.
You need a Tetris shot. Tetris.
Have you been Tetrisized?
Square, rectangle, trapezoid, Tetrazoid.
Nintendo introduces Tetris.
Put a piece here, put a piece there.
Use your thumbs, use your eyes.
Find yourself Tetris-sized.
Now you're playing with power.
If you think back in your any kind of computing or gaming history, it doesn't even have to really be gaming necessarily, but I cannot think of a computer or a gadget or a toy that I ever had that you couldn't play Tetris on. Even like an old, you know, computer that we had in high school that was in the library that, yep, there was Tetris on the TRS-80. I would play it there. Everything has had it. And you kind of covered this mode a second ago. I found this on Wikipedia, I think. It said officially licensed, so not counting the bootlegs, officially licensed Tetris games have been released on a variety of platforms as standalone products. It's the most ported game series, having more than 220 released across 70 unique platforms as of last year, 2023.
Wow. Yeah. Holy cow.
Yeah. And as I mean, all the physical copies and the digital downloads that you talked about. And that's the official. What about unofficial? I mean, how many games have you seen that use that mechanic of a falling brick and fit those in? You know, you've been on vacation and been packing your car and start singing the.
Actually, it's funny because my son-in-law, he's really good at like packing things in the. So we say, oh, yeah, he could Tetris the crap out of that thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, how'd they become a verb? Something that you can do. Now, there was a we found this Wikipedia article. I was searching for, well, how many variants are there? And I started looking. List of Tetris variants. I'll give you the link to share. I'm not going to read this article to you, obviously, because it's pages and pages long. And you scroll down through the thing, and it starts in 1988 for ports of the game. So it started in 84, and the port started in 88. And it runs through Tetris on all these platforms, Weltris, which was a 3D one, Hattris, where you were literally dropping identical hats, like bowler hat, and pork pie hat, Facetris, you're dropping faces, just that matching game, the mechanic of Tetris. And I've been scrolling since we started talking, and I'm halfway through the article. There are just so many. But then the ultimate one, the most recent one, I guess, I found. So I want to say, what's the most recent one? So the earliest one. In 2020, there was a game called Tetris Effect Connected, and it was out on everything. The Xbox One, the PlayStation 5, plus the Meta Quest 2 and the Oculus and the the VR goggle thing. You could play Tetris on. Every new technology that comes along, they roll Tetris onto that because everybody wants to play Tetris. And I saw the list of celebrities. I remember in 1995, when we were huge Star Trek fans, I guess we still are, and we're seeing Patrick Stewart had once said on a talk show he was addicted to Tetris because he has somebody gave it to him on a little Game Boy or something. So now, when we have talked about famous arcade games and video games before, and one thing that was usually pretty easy to dig up was the high scores of Tetris. But being so many, being so many versions, we really stacked the deck against George here to look up the high score records for Tetris. What were you able to find on it this time, George?
Well, I mean, there are quite a few. I, of course, went to Twin Galaxies first, and Twin Galaxies has a plethora of different platform boards. That's kind of the way they divide it up. It's not just by game, but also by platform. So there's actually 76 different Tetris platform leaderboards.
Ooh.
And in case anybody out there listening wants to try and get their name listed in Infinity, there's 10 of them that have zero entries. So you can go to Twin Galaxies high score today.
Any
score.
You
have to do something official to get a referee out, but you can do one.
I've played Tetris like a million times. I'm not even sure how you get high scores. I just went for time.
I don't know the numbers, but I know you talked about clearing the lines, right? So clearing a line gets you a certain amount of points. Clearing the more lines you clear at the same time gets you more points. So the highest scoring mechanism, I think, in regular Tetris is getting four lines, which they call a Tetris. And maybe you get points just for dropping a block. I don't know. Yeah. I'm not a huge Tetris player, but I know getting all four lines at once. That's why that tall vertical block, that's the one you want, that hero piece that you can drop in. Yeah. Best I know. So I know you do score, but I don't know exactly how you get those. So George, you were saying there were 76 different platforms on there and some of them didn't have anything. Of the ones that did have scores, were there anything particularly notable you were able to dig up?
Well, probably the two that stood out the most for me. Number one, the arcade, because that was the first place I ever actually played Tetris, was at a two-story Chuck E. Cheese, which I'll talk about later on. The arcade, you can score actually different amounts. And so right now, the high score listed on Twin Galaxies for arcade scores is 2,072,133 by a guy named Jeff Craggy in 2012. It was apparently by certificate. It's undisputed, whatever that means on their platform. But for the arcade, you can get a wide range of scores. For the NES, which is the other main scoring system that everybody plays Tetris on, there's actually a maximum score, and you can't really get above that score, and that's 999,999.
Right.
On a Nintendo, you can't get higher than that. However, there is a separate leaderboard called it's the Classic Tetris World Championship. So they have their own thing. And with their leaderboard, different than what Twin Galaxies has, what they do is they not only ask people to submit that score of 999,999, but also the amount of lines that it took them to get there. And they even go so far as to break down the lines into fractions in order to determine who is the highest. So right now, the guy who has the highest is when he get up to it's level 25, which is much faster than most other people. Level 25 with 0.22 of a line. So that's when he achieved his score. So he achieved it faster than anyone else.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Oh, so not the score so much as like a race to, like, how quickly or how efficiently can I get that score? Is that kind of what they're doing?
So I would imagine the thing you were talking about earlier with the getting score for doing multiple lines at one time gives you some kind of a bonus. And so maybe he did more of that than anyone else and got to that thing faster, because at the top of the board, it's like, hey, if it takes you to level 28 and 1.03 lines, that's where your max score is. But this guy got there in 20, like the top six guys are all in level 25 with 0.22, 0.73, 1.21 lines, 5.34 lines, so on and so forth. So
interesting.
It's like a race to the bottom almost. It's like, how quickly and efficiently, accurately can we get it done? Huh? So since the game was maxed at a score, people have found a way to compete by being better at how quickly they can get to a certain score. Yeah. That's interesting. It's so popular that we're going to find our own way to even find high scores in it. So, wow. Yeah. So I guess we could each grab one that doesn't have a high score and take a high score. They don't have one. All right. Thanks for digging that stuff up, George. When we get back from this break, we're going to talk about some interesting trivia that you might not know about Tetris and something George alluded to a second ago. Talk about our early experiences with the game. Stick around.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Each episode of Gen X Grown Up has show notes loaded with links where you can learn more about our topics. And there's even more to see and hear over at genxgrownup.com.
When things start changing right before your eyes, when shapes just seem to appear out of nowhere, when the whole world seems transformed, you've been Tetrisized.
Nintendo introduces Tetris.
It will mesmerize you. Tetris challenges the mind and puzzles the imagination. No other game can stack up to Tetris. Nintendo, now you're playing with power.
For a game this popular and this widely distributed and this well known, it's unavoidable that there's going to be some interesting trivia that you can find about it. So I know we found a few bits, and the first one, Mo, was something that I had never occurred to me, but you know, Pajitnov had to find the name somewhere, and it came from a something in sport, actually.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird. I mean, it's definitely a mishmash, but he named it Tetris because it's a combination of the Latin word tetra, which is for four, because every piece is four squares. So that makes perfect sense.
Oh, right. Okay.
You know? Yeah. And then tennis, because that's his favorite game. So the first part is logical. The second part has nothing to do with the game itself.
Oh, like tetra miss, like a portmanteau of the.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, it's funny because another fact that came up is that I guess a Russian, which makes sense, Alexander Serebrov, he's the first person to play a video game in space.
Oh.
And of course, the game was Tetris.
Tetris.
You know, what else is
of
this?
Course.
when he was packing, this is again 1993, and these people, this is the Mir space station, which I'm sure most kids who are listening to this have no idea what I'm talking about. He packed his Game Boy with a copy of Tetris on it.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, you know, during those rare moments of leisure, he enjoyed playing his Game Boy. So, you know, there's that.
How appropriate. That's cool. And for the Russian space station, of course, why wouldn't you have a Russian game? Makes sense. That's awesome.
You know, it's interesting because outside of Russia, Korbaneniki, I've looked this up. I have no idea what it means or how to say it, but it's widely known as the Tetris theme tune that John's always talking about when you're packing your luggage away in the car and everything.
Yeah.
But it mainly comes from its appearance in the Nintendo Game Boy version of the game, because in each one of these different versions that we've talked about before, they don't all have the same tune.
Oh, really?
It's being played in the background as you're playing the game. So
I did not know that.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting that that one is the one that's the most widely known, and I'm guessing because what we talked about earlier, that it's the most widely adopted version.
Mm-hmm.
That Game Boy was so popular, it basically revolutionized an industry, and Tetris was the main driving force behind that.
With a little luck in the edit, we should have the Tetris song playing in the background here, though we don't currently hear it. But let's hope. Let's hope I remember to put that in for the listeners. You talked, Mo, about the pieces that are the four squares, the line or the S or the Z or whatever those are, right? Those have names. I didn't know this before.
Each one?
Tetrominoes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I guess that makes sense.
Like dominoes?
Dominoes, I mean, okay. But dominoes. Tetris pieces, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, it has the tetra, the four, and then ominoes. Because dominoes was his other favorite game. I don't know.
Ominoes.
But now, I never called them anything. And for a time, there was like an urban myth or a rumor or a meme, or maybe somebody was an April Fool's joke. They had said, hey, do you guys know these things have names? And they even had a photo of a manual, an old manual from the Nintendo game. And the theory was that they were called, get this, Orange Ricky, Blue Ricky, Hero, Smash Boy, Tee-Wee, Rhode Island Z, and Cleveland Z. Now, these weren't stupid, I know, but everyone believed it for such a long time. It was a total scam. It was just somebody playing a gag. But it made the news because it was like, oh, this discovery of this old video game. In 2019, Jeopardy used those names as a trivia bit, saying, what were the names of these trivia? And so they also fell subject to the, these are the names of the things. Not true. They're called I block, J block, L block, O block, S block. They're just called what you think they are. But there was probably about 5 or 6 years there where the internet thought these things had names, and they'd always had names, and we just missed it somehow. Not the case, but they're just called what they look like.
You know, they definitely have affected our minds with playing Tetris over the years. There's actually some cognitive studies that have shown that if you play Tetris long enough, your brain can actually start to involuntarily see pictures of Tetris combinations, even when you're not playing. You know, like just in life, like John packing his trunk, you know, he's seeing how the suitcases and pieces fit in there. But I mean, it happens in other video games. I know oftentimes after playing Grand Theft Auto, I want to just start driving down the middle of the lane. In the car. So,
a quick confession. Once after playing Grand Theft Auto 4, I did run a red light and realized it just moments after I did it. Because I was in that mindset. I'm like, oh, no. Because you don't stop for lights when you're playing a game, right?
And was the realization when the lights behind you started going red and blue?
Yeah, I know. Right?
Was that when the realization happened?
No, that's when you started accelerating.
It was when I looked back. I looked back and I went, oh, no, I think that was red. I think I just ran that. Nothing happened to me other than I got a real reality check that I had to pay more attention.
Oh, my God.
Now, we also want to talk about, we love to talk about our early experiences here. It's how we get to know our listeners and our listeners get to know us a little more. And we're going to talk about our earliest memories of Tetris here when we're here in this segment. And I'll start because my introduction to it was most definitely the Game Boy, which to find out here, aside from Pagetnov's original distributions on computers, that was the first licensed official version. And I didn't buy a Game Boy. Somebody loaned me one or left it at my house or something. And as always happens, you never find a Game Boy with nothing in it. It had Tetris in it, which led me to believe earlier that maybe it was the pack-in game, which I'm not sure of. And I didn't care about this Game Boy. Of course, I liked my Atari and I liked it, but this little thing was black and white. And I looked at it as sub. It was not even as good as Atari. Now, we now know in hindsight, it was much better functionally. It just didn't have a backlight and whatever, you know, its CPU was better and all that. But I didn't care about it. And so it just sat on the table for a while, waiting on whoever it was to come pick it up. And then finally, one day I went, I'm so bored that take it out. And that was my introduction, not only to Tetris, but to the Game Boy in general. And after, I don't know, half an hour or so, I got it. I'm like, oh, I still, to this day, I'm not interested in the puzzle mechanism of how to fit these pieces together. It doesn't spark my curiosity or my imagination. But when I started playing it, I immediately understood why people get so captivated with it, because you were just saying a second ago, George, that Tetris effect where you start to see these things in real life, because it does something to your brain, just the simplicity and the structure and the order of it. I appreciated it right away. It's, again, still not one of my favorite games, but it's one that I will not play if I see it somewhere and check it out. Just my appreciation with it there. Now, I've not sought it out on other platforms, but I definitely experienced it on the Game Boy first, and it definitely opened my eyes to why it's so, so popular. Now, do you remember, George, you said something about a multi-decker Chuck E. Cheese or something earlier. Is that here?
Yeah, I've talked about it a little bit before, probably when we had the Chuck E. Cheese Showbiz episode. Here in Tallahassee, Florida, there was actually a two-story Chuck E. Cheese, one of the kind of rare ones. They didn't do that very often. On the bottom floor was the pizza and the little rooms with all of the animatronics and the ball pit with the little kiddie play area with the tube tunnels and stuff. Mm-hmm. On the upper floor, the entire upper floor was the arcade. And so you would go up there, and especially for the popular games, there would be like three or four cabinets of that game.
Oh, sure.
So like there was, three or four Defenders and Pac-Mans and Donkey Kongs. I specifically remember four Pingo machines. Why they had four Pingo, I don't know, because that game was never that popular. But over in the right-hand corner, you came up the stairs and you were kind of facing that right-hand corner because you came in at the left-hand corner. There was two Tetris machines. And I specifically remember them because their marquees were that different color than most of the other arcade games at the time. They were kind of that brown and gold lettering with the Russian building design.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I know about, yeah.
Yeah.
And I specifically remember it catching my eye the first time because the R in Tetris is reversed on that marquee.
Sure.
That's right. That's right.
So I, you know, as a little kid, that just looked odd, you know, that R being flipped over. So it drew me over to the machine and I started watching. It had the Russian music playing. It wasn't the Nintendo thing, I don't think. I could be wrong, but it was a Russian sounding theme song. And so I sat there and played it and just got addicted to playing it because it was a pretty simple mechanic, as we've talked about. And once you figured out how to do it, it was one of the arcade games that didn't require fast twitch reflexes. It required planning and thinking. And so you could get a little bit more play time out of your quarter than, say, a Defender.
Yeah.
But you could still enjoy and have a good time. Now, I was often the only person playing Tetris because it was in that corner. It's not an action pass, you know, loud sound game. But I have become addicted to puzzle, you know, jigsaw fitting kind of games because of that. I think there's even a game now that I play on my phone called Wudoku, which is some, you know, like thing where you fit these pieces together. I don't know. They were trying to capitalize on Sudoku at the time, I guess. But all the pieces in that game are Tetris shaped. There's like the little S things and the square and the lines. But it always frustrates me because I can't flip their orientations. However I get them, that's how the fuckers are. So it's a little bit more difficult, but it all stems from seeing it that first time at Chuck E. Cheese.
I just have to point out, I love, you've done this before, of that two-level Chuck E. Cheese, that you have a mental map of it. Like you said, I come up the stairs and I can see it in this corner on the right or whatever. That's just how indelible that memory, some of those early arcade memories are for us. Oh, that's really cool. Mo, do you have any particular memories or early memories of Tetris?
I mean, I remember, basically, I remember when the PC version came out. It was probably late 80s. I was working at the time, and the boss came out one day and literally everybody was playing Tetris. Like, no work was being done at all, you know. And you really had to, and we had to, again, someone had to bring in the floppy, and of course back then they didn't really have as much copy protection and stuff, so they just kind of shoved it in every computer. But man, he was pissed. But it was just like, it was just weird because like people who had no, like it caught me because no matter how, whatever age the person was, they enjoyed playing it. It was like, it had this universal appeal because I think, George, what you said earlier, it's like, it didn't require like twitch things. Like you just had to plan things out and just be somewhat organized, your thing, which that could be for anybody, right? And I think if, especially if you were older at the time, it probably made you feel like, oh, I'm getting in on this video game thing that all these kids are doing. But I just remember it's like, I mean, literally every single person was playing it. And it was just one. It, that was the last time we played it in the office, of course. But up until that point, though, it was like, it was just, like I said, it just blew my mind that even people, you know, at the time who were in their like 50s who work in there, they were just having a ball playing this game.
You know, you bring up a really interesting point, which is Tetris transcends gaming. People that don't care about video games play Tetris. I heard stories back in when I was a kid of, you know, grandparents wanting a Game Boy just to play Tetris. They didn't care about any other games. And it wasn't even a game to them other than it was a hobby or a pastime, like Sudoku or whatever, you know, like you were saying, George. It's the thing that something about that mechanism, the structure, the order and the non-twitch gameplay of it appealed to so many people and continues to. That's why it's so lasting, man.
Yeah.
And so because it's been so lasting and been around for so long, it's had a definite impact and legacy on society and our pop culture. So, and when we get back, we're going to run through some of that. So please stick around.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
If you're a diehard Gen X grown-up, you can pledge your support by clicking Join on YouTube or by becoming a patron at genxgrownup.com/Patreon.
Tetris 2!
Tetris 2!
Tetris 2!
Tetris 2!
It's not just Tetris. Now challenge the system or go head to head. Different shapes, different shades, and this time, There's bombs in it. It's Tetris 2 on Game Boy or NES.
4 decades and still going strong. And so it's no wonder that Tetris has made an impact on pop culture and entertainment and media. And there are a few things that we dug up, even just from recent history. I don't know how recent the phenomenon is of doing documentaries about, you know, video games. That may be relatively new, but as far back now, wow, over a decade ago in 2012, I remember a really good documentary that talks about many of the things we've talked about called Ecstasy of Order. If you guys have checked this one out, but it talks about that Tetris effect, how people get in this zone and how they're able to start min-maxing the game and, you know, max points per line or whatever. And spoiler alert, some of the things these guys are trying to accomplish, somebody finally did just this past year. But in Ecstasy of Order, the documentary takes some of the best Tetris players and follows them as they're preparing for the World Championship. Now, there are several of these things. There are 1990 World Championships. It started up and it continues to go. People trying to max out the score, you know, get that, you said the NES version, that 999999, that theoretical max out. They're all trying to get there, right? They're trying to get to it. And so this documentary covers over 2 decades of people attempting to master and beat and conquer that kind of de facto Nintendo version. And it's one of those documentaries that if you haven't seen it, like Tetris itself, you don't have to be a fan of Tetris or video games to appreciate these people pouring their all into trying to mastering a craft, something they're in love with that they really enjoy. And it's the Ecstasy of Order. The title kind of comes from that being in the zone. And we've talked about before our favorite games, you know, the world kind of melts away and you're in there with the game. And that's what these guys experience. It's a really fascinating documentary and worth checking out even now, a decade after the fact, even though the record they're shooting for has now been broken. It doesn't matter. It's still entertaining.
There was also a miniseries back in 2022 called The Tetris Murders. I don't know if you guys saw this. It was a TV thing.
Yeah.
But basically, like, the guy who created Tetris was found dead alongside his wife and son in their home, and the police were investigating it. I mean, he's still alive today, so I don't think this had any basis in truth, but...
Well, no. It was true.
This is the co-creator, not the original.
Okay. That's right. I'm wrong. Okay, cool.
Yeah, it's Vladimir, not Paget.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It was a guy who worked with him. He moved to California to found his own company in Palo Alto, and he and his wife were found dead and young son. So, yeah.
Yeah. And it turned out to be like a murder suicide or something, wasn't it? It was sad. It was a sad story. I remember that much.
You'll have to watch the documentary and see, but it was fascinating. I mean, this isn't about the game. This is about the people that founded the game. Right. And
I think for me, the one that surprised me the most when you talk about how the Tetris story has been told in modern media has been the 2023 Tetris movie starring Taron Egerton, the guy from the Kingsman movies.
Oh, yeah.
And he was Elton John in the biopic and everything.
Yeah.
I saw the trailer for this, and I think we even talked about it on the podcast when it was coming out last year. Mm-hmm. And I remember being distraught at how badly I wanted to avoid watching this movie.
Oh, really?
Because I'm like, who the hell wants to make a movie about Tetris? Really? Why is it like, as much as some people loathe the movie Pixels from Adam Sandler, that was terrible. Like 10 years old at this point or whatever. I was determined to hate this movie that much. Then I watched the thing finally, and I actually enjoyed it. It was really fun. I didn't expect the story to have so much intrigue, so much danger, so much action. I mean, anytime there's a movie about the video game Tetris that involves a car chase scene, that's pretty goddamn cool. If you're interested at all in learning the dramatized story of how Tetris came to be, this movie does a good job of making what might be boring material if you were just reading it into something that's interesting to watch that will give you a large amount of the facts with some of it skewed to the entertainment side, but still
for dramatic effect.
Yeah, a really fun film that's worth the watch, and it just came out last year. It's got a really good cast of believable people in the roles, and it tells the story of how Tetris made itself out into the world.
Yeah, I agree. I also was like, Tetris movie? I was thinking it was a movie based on the game. It's not. It's really based mm-hmm. on the origin of the story of, you know, and it's Iron Curtain stuff. It's Cold War. It's espionage. Nothing I expected with these little fallen geometric shapes. So, as I mentioned a second ago, in that ecstasy of order, these world champion players. Well, just last year, I think it was the end of 2023, a young man named Willis Gibson, who goes by the screen name Blue Scooty, it's his name online. He was able to max out and kill screen the NES Tetris, which, as we all know from George's information a minute ago, it maxes out at 999,999 points. But you could still be dropping stuff, and he was able to keep it going until it rolled over to level 157, at which point the game has a fit and freezes and will not proceed. And the company, founded now by Pajitnov, acknowledged, yes, he maxed out this game. He broke it. He has basically finished Tetris, something that was never intended to be possible. They verified finished and take him the credit. Yeah.
And just to give a little bit of context to that, so those high scores that I was talking about earlier, right now, the number one guy, he reached that score at level 25. So think about it. This kid went 6 times further
wow.
than the guy who has the current world record for efficiency of reaching that score. However, what I also found interesting, and this was where I think we got this factoid started from, we all found out about this because of a local news report in that young man's hometown. And the reason why we all found out about this local news report is not because this young man was widely known or it was a highly publicized event or anything mm-hmm. like that. The local newscaster, this lady who was, you know, obviously like head cheerleader, pissed off that her life didn't go any further than head news person.
Not that we're profiling news anchors or anything.
I'm just saying. Decided that at the end of the segment where the reporter had gone on scene and talked to the kid and showed done all the B-roll stuff and everything, at the end of that segment, she decided to make light of the achievement. Let me explain something. We live in 2024 now. This is a very bad time to make fun of nerds.
Yeah.
Do not get that community in an uproar because they will roast your ass all over the internet, which they did, which is why this thing gained such fame and popularity. It just broke down the doors. I mean, nobody was really even recognizing that this kid was playing. This lady makes an offhanded comment at the end of the segment, kind of like, oh, what's the big deal? Is he still living with his parents in their basement or something? And the fucking internet lost it. And it was so much so that even my son, he was the first one to point out the story to me, sent me a Discord text and said, hey, Dad, did you see this? Somebody beat one of your old games. And this lady made fun of him and everybody hates her now.
Don't mess with the nerds, man. We rule the world now. Yeah, we went from sand in our face to
buying the beach.
6 figures, 7 figures, whatever. Yeah, right. So, well, way to go, Blue Scooty. Congratulations on doing what no one could do for 39 years. You did it. And you got to find that video and link it in the description. At least the part where he does it. You think he's going to explode.
Do you want the newscaster one where she's
whichever, maybe that one too. You have to see him because he's been working at this. The full live stream is available. It's a couple hours long. But at the end, he's so enthusiastic. He can't believe it. He's like, oh, he's running around the room. He's so excited. And deservedly so, he did what nobody else had been able to do up until that point for all this time. So credit to him. Yeah, I'll tell you, for a game that, as I've admitted, is not one of my favorite games, I've got to give props to Tetris and to the people that are that good at it across the globe who dedicate themselves to it. It obviously has staying power. It obviously has earned its position as a well-revered, and I don't think it's going anywhere. In 40 more years, somebody will be going, the 80th anniversary of Tetris we'll be talking about, I fully will expect. That, I think, is going to wrap it up for this Backtrack edition of our show. Fourth listener, if you have any other Tetris knowledge or personal Tetris anecdotes, please drop us a line and let us know about it at podcast@genxgrownup.com. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another Backtrack, and next week is the regular edition of our show. Until then, I am John. George, thank you so much for being here, man.
Yes, sir.
Mo, you know I appreciate you.
Always fun, man.
Fourth listener, you're the one we all appreciate most of all, though, and we cannot wait to talk to you again next time. Bye-bye.
See you guys.
Take care, everybody.
No
Gen X Grown Up is a member of the Evergreen Podcast family. Learn more at evergreenpodcasts.com.
Unacceptable for grown-ups. Your dinner cannot just be french fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown-up.
Marvelous. For $50, George will tell you about his 1991 arrest and incarceration.
$50 a month. 3 month minimum. Yeah.
I give you one sentence at a time for 7 months.
It's like a cliffhanger. Hey, and July 1st, you'll find out about the rape.
What the fuck? You went to rape? Jesus Christ, man.
For $50 a month, like, I better get a good story.
It could have been just a simple, yeah, like, he spray painted something on the side of a car. George had to go straight to rape.
No, I meant when you were incarcerated, not you committed the thing. That's not what I meant.
Yeah, you might be the result. You might be the victim of it. Right. You don't know.
Either way, that doesn't make it better.
It definitely does not. You
know, in fairness, George, maybe it was consensual. I don't know the whole story.
Oh, my Lord.
We're not judging.
Yeah, you kind of are.
We're not judging. We're inferring. We're implying. All right. How's the promo look?
My name is Cindy Burnett, and each week I interview at least two traditionally published authors on my podcast, Thoughts from a Page. We talk spoiler-free about their books, so you can listen whether you have read the book or not. And then we delve into things that you most likely won't hear about anywhere else. The importance of the cover design, why they included various aspects of the story, personal details about both the books and the authors' lives, and so much more. You can find the podcast on every major platform and learn more about it on my website, thoughtsfromapage.com. Thanks so much for checking it out.